Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, a show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And today we are talking about making comics with a creator who has a couple of comics coming out and has been doing creative work for what I found out is all of his life, it sounds like, from music to video games and now comics, amongst other things, and a music festival in the mix. Carlos Gifoni is a writer that's based in California, and he's joining the show along with Jim Gibbons to talk about an assortment of things on pitching. But in general, Carlos, we were talking before we started rolling, it's very cool to get to know your background, and I don't want to give your resume in a way that cuts it short. So if you want to give a little bit of your background and how you got involved in Comics Experience, I think that would be interesting to folks, because we do seem to have a lot of overlap with people that have creative careers, and in some cases maybe their careers haven't gone the creative route, and then they discover comics, they rediscover comics, and they get an itch, and they do something like a Comics Experience, or they listen to this just to get an idea of how to get that comic thing going.
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all.
Absolutely.
So, I am originally Venezuelan. And when I was a kid and I went to the newsstands, I was probably 8 or 9. For some reason, the only American comic book that you could get were DC Comics. And it was either Batman or Superman. And I was telling you before, for some reason, for me, Batman wasn't appealing. Probably because, Venezuela, it has nice areas, but also not so nice areas. So I didn't want to get involved in that world. But Superman was being, you know, this alien, super powerful entity. It was very appealing to me. And I had seen the only experience that I had with those characters was through the Super Friends show.
Nice.
Reruns, probably. So when I got to see the comic book, I'm like, oh, wait, this is a lot different. You know, this is actually more, a little bit more violent and more interesting. And I got into it that way. But there wasn't a lot that was available. So I gravitated towards music and video games, because those were more accessible for me when I was a kid. By the time I was 13, I was singing in a punk rock band. I continued to do some music stuff. I started learning programming and, studying video games, because I thought that was the only way to get into video games. And then I moved to the U.S. when I was 17, to Miami at first. I continued that path and moved to New York later. And I was, I was playing music with different musicians in New York. I was in a couple of bands. I was touring, and I continued to go into video games, first as a developer, then as a producer, creative director. And now I'm a product manager at my current job. But I got into comics again in New York because I was dating someone who was reading Why the Last Man. And that was a realization point for me that, professional comics could be about a lot more than superheroes, right? And then I got into a little bit into it back then, but I was so busy because I had a full daytime job. I was running a festival, I was touring, I was doing everything I could, that I couldn't really get into comics super deep. And then about 5 years, 6 years ago, I moved to LA, and things got a little more calmer for me. And I started really digging into, all the Vertigo stuff, Image, Dark Horse, etc., and really getting into it. And at some point I was like, okay, maybe there's something here that I can try. I can try to tell my own story in this format, in some way, in this medium. And Comics Experience was one of the things that I looked at, because I was reading every book that I could about making comics, and I was listening to a bunch of podcasts. And this podcast was my introduction to Comics Experience while I was doing my research, and eventually I joined the workshop forums.
Well, Carlos, it sounds like you're obviously a very uncreative and lazy guy. So I don't know how you got this book greenlit. No, I think it's always fascinating to me to hear about how people get into comics. From some people, it's like day one, they knew exactly it's what they wanted to do. But I feel like for a lot more people, you know, you kind of at a certain point hit this moment where you're like, you know what? I like these things. I could maybe do this thing. I got ideas. I got this. And then it's like trying to reverse engineer, like, well, how do I learn how to do this or teach myself how to do this?
Yeah. Now, I remember when I was a kid, I had notebooks full of like different like robots that I drew and like make different names for them. I probably watching Transformers cartoon and other Japanese cartoons that were playing and Venezuelan TV. So I was interested in that, in doing something, I think, with that was visual from a long time before I got was able to do it. It's just the opportunity and the ability for me to really get into it wasn't there, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So I'm interested. Let's dive into pitching this project a little bit, because it seems like once you kind of knew what you wanted to be doing in terms of like scripting and doing your research, then yep. obviously you had to put together, you know, what you were going to start trying to do when you're out there at conventions or sending emails or something like that. And what I'm really curious about is how many versions, so Strayed as a concept, yeah. I guess, maybe, how many versions of the pitch do you think you went through? Was it like gold right off the bat, or I would guess more likely, you know, a bunch
no,
of
no,
and real quick, out. Maybe a quick yeah. for folks that are unfamiliar with Strayed, let them know the quick plot synopsis for your comic that's coming out through Dark Horse as of this recording in August of 2019.
Sure. Strayed is about an astral traveling cat named Lou and his owner, which is a genius scientist named Kiara. And Kiara makes a device that can read Lou's brainwaves and translates them into speech so they can communicate to each other. This is in the far future, and the military is actually using them to find new planets that the military is colonizing. And they eventually found out that that's what they're doing to them. And that's kind of how the first issue jumps in, where the first issue comes in. Yeah. I think particularly, so the pitch had two parts to it. One part was, the description of what the book was and the creative team and a synopsis of what the series was going to be, comparable titles, all that kind of stuff. And I did a lot of research into like different formats for that, different online groups. Jim Sub's website was actually very useful in seeing like, okay, this is what a pitch looks like, right? And I, and I started to share that idea with a few friends. I wrote, there was another pitch that I did before Strayed that didn't go anywhere. And I probably wrote down at least maybe like 40, 50 different ideas that I could explore. Like I would just spend time, like a few hours sitting down and writing anything, right? Like Russian mob in an ice cream factory or whatever, you know?
Right.
Any idea. And I just happened to be reading about something that was like related to astral travel. And I look at my cats and it was one of the ideas that hit me. And for some reason, whenever I mention astral travel and cat to any friends of mine, when I was talking about like the fact that I wanted to do comics, I could see their eyes always light up, you know. So I knew that was the idea that I needed to pursue, right? And that pitch took me months to get right, and it's just like one page, right? And I actually didn't really I would say didn't really think even about starting the script until that felt really solid, and it still mm-hmm. changed as I was writing it. And then the pitch was the first 8 pages, actually, of issue one was the second part of the pitch, which is like, okay, the cover and the first 8 pages. I felt like the first 8 pages had a were enough for me to tell like what the story was about. That turned out to be good for issue one. And I'll say that, yeah, nothing in, at least for me so far, nothing in comics is like you write it once and it's done. Issue one, I wrote at least 10 times, like rewrote different parts. At some point it was, right now this you jump and Lou is right away, he's astral traveling and they're him and Kiara in the space station, right? It's not a, I'm not telling you the story of like, oh, how did Lou get his powers and how did him and Kiara, I mean, I know that stuff. It's in my world Bible, but it's not, that's not what the story is about. So I'm jumping right into it. No, so
I read prior to our conversation today, I was doing a little extra research on the book, and I read in an interview where you said there was like a whole issue's worth of material on origin story of the two leads. And you're like, well, that's maybe not where we start. I'm going to, you know, hold that off for later. And the editor in me reading that, I was like, oh, I love that. I always feel like people are so like, well, I got to start at the beginning, or I've got to set this up, or all this. And it's like, really, I think one of the things a lot of editors look for when they are looking at pitches is not necessarily like, oh, here's the whole world, here's the whole setup, here's all of the big things we can get into. They really need to know, like, how is the story going to start off? How is this first volume, this first five pages, this first issue, this first, you know, two issues, how are they going to hook people? And I think, and having just, you know, right before we got on the phone too, read the first issue, I think it's smart. You jump right in. And I was that as well? Was that something you figured out on the pitch, or is that something that came with like a little bit was in the pitch and then your editor drew it out of you for the first issue, or how did that go?
Yeah. So definitely was something that I had thought about. And I'm going to also say that there were different people in my team for this book at the beginning. So it's gone through. It went through two different editors, and Chas Pangburn is the third editor, the one that's stuck. And also I had an artist before, Wando, who's an amazing artist who I was very extremely lucky to get in the book. That didn't work out. And all those people kind of helped shape it a little bit in a way, in the sense that, you know, I was trying things out at the beginning and they weren't working out, and an editor would give me a direction and I try that out, and then I didn't feel like it was right. And then by the time Chas came in, I knew where I wanted to start it, but I was already writing that origin story that I mentioned in that interview, and I just needed to get it out of me anyways, even though at the end I was fairly sure that that wasn't the right way to start. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think that's good for like an origin story is probably good for a superhero comic book, which is ongoing. And like, OK, you want to tell people at the start right away, make it really simple and easy for them. And you know that you're going to go for like 100 issues. Right. But in the case of like a short series, right, like I have five issues, I got to get right into it and like get to the meat of it and start telling the good stuff, you know.
Jim, to not to derail it too much, but with your background, especially being a Dark Horse, were there things in pitches that you saw consistently that made them less, you know, you looked at them and said, this isn't quite baked enough to be where it needs to be, versus what Carlos is talking about, you know, getting to that point where he really had his pitch document ready to go. Were there any common things that you would see coming through that just, you mentioned that what impressed you about reading up on it was like, oh, we just got to it. Anything that for listeners that might be like, hey, this is a common thing and here's why I think it happens?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because in my time at Dark Horse, and essentially my whole time as an editor, you're always seeing stuff where you can kind of tell that there's like maybe a more interesting way to present things, or maybe the person pitching you is maybe a little hung up on like a certain introduction to the story or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. But I do think what happens sometimes is for editors, right? You'll see something and you'll see a piece of art, or you'll read like a really mm-hmm. good elevator pitch or something like that. And you're like, okay, that's interesting. I think there's something there, you know, and that kind of hooks you. And I think that's a really important part of the pitch, is you got to get something to keep the editor reading. But I think what takes the editor from, okay, I want to read more, to I really want to move forward with this pitch, is the idea of how the creative team is going to present the story. And mm-hmm. if you start looking at a kind of an outline or whatever it might be, whether it's just a pitch doc, a single page pitch document or an outline, and it just feels like it's really dragging, or it doesn't feel like you get to anything interesting for a while, or you don't really understand the stakes of the story, you know, it makes it a lot harder, because you're looking at this going, I've got a full workload, and maybe there is a really good story buried in here, but I might have to dedicate 2, 3, 4 times as much energy to pulling that story out of this than someone who's spent a lot more time refining their pitch, so they can show mm-hmm. you, hey, here's my vision to kind of bring people into the story, to not waste time, to really get things going, to hook people with issue one. When you see that, it makes you much more quickly go, okay, we can work together on this. This'll be good, and it'll be fun.
Nice.
Yeah. To add to that, I think, because you're working on that pitch document nonstop for a while and rewriting and like changing things, eventually you can lose sight of it, like it could turn into something that you no longer know if it's good or not. That's where I think it's super important to have either an editor that can check it out and give you feedback, or friends, that are either writers or just like comics that can read it for you and give you feedback, or, Comics Experience also another place where you can go and post your stuff and get feedback, because that's going to help a lot, the same way that you want to practice your pitch in person with friends so that when you have to say it, tell it to someone, whether it's an editor or not, you have it sharp. It's the same thing with the actual pitch, right? It takes a lot of eyes to make sure that it's right.
Well, and so one of the questions I was a little curious about this, because I think it's another thing that I always look for when I'm looking at pitches, is to really understand like character motivations and then the stakes of a story. And right now, and I don't know if this was the original log line or if this was something that like kind of came up in the process of promoting the book, but on the Dark Horse website for Strayed Number One, it says, "Most cats have 9 lives, but the fates of billions rest with this feline." And I think that's a great, like, it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, I understand the stakes of the story right now. I know there's kind of the unexpected hero. There's a lot on the line. And then you get into with the rest of the, the synopsis, you get, some of the astral projection and some of the sci-fi elements and stuff like that. But was that when you started pitching the book, Carlos, how long did it take you to start landing on like that good tight elevator pitch where people start?
Oh man. So that is the first thing for me that you have to work on. Even now I'm working on other pitches. The first thing that I try to get at least close to right is the log line, because even though, you're trying to express what the book is about in a few sentences, right? So like the short version for Strayed is, an astral traveling cat will have to save the galaxy, right? That gives you plenty of information,
yeah,
right? That's something that I think is very important, because then, from that little piece of information, from that log line, you begin to think about like, okay, what's the first thing that I have to do? What's the first issue? What's the second, third, fourth, fifth, and so on. And you're kind of building from that very basic unit, right? And I think at this point, I don't remember at what point I had it right. The one on the Dark Horse website, I don't remember if I wrote that or my editor helped me with that. There's been so many iterations of the pitch, right? That I don't remember. But yes, definitely the log line or that initial pitch in a few sentences is super key for getting that idea rolling, I think.
Yeah, I think I always think of it as one of those things where, like, not only is the creative team helping to sell their book to the publisher and to the editor, they're also helping make the publisher and editor's job easier by beginning to set them up with like, hey, here's what this is. Here's how you can market this. Here's how you can start thinking about this. Because especially when you're pitching something, usually it's like you have a few sample pages, you've got a little bit of maybe a loose outline, maybe, just a pitch document. And you want to, I think, often like lead the imagination of the people you're pitching to enough where they can start to envision what this is about. And if you can't distill it as the person pitching the book, it is very hard to get someone else to go, oh, here's what this book is about and here's why we should publish it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I think I mentioned this before we were talking, but like pitching never ends, It begins with pitching to your friends and pitching to yourself even, right? And it goes into pitching to like publishers and editors in particular. But then after you have a book, then you have to pitch it to the marketing person if they have a marketing person, right? Then you have to pitch it to as many stores as you can, whether it's in person or through email, right? In events, you have to pitch it to the different outlets that want to cover it, or if you want to get coverage for it, right? You pitch it to people at conventions, right? Pitching never ends.
Yeah. Then you go on podcasts and you pitch it too.
Exactly. Yeah. No, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, one thing that, Carlos, you had actually put in some of your thoughts, on the subject of talking about pitching was knowing what a publisher publishes and what they could you know, what, I guess it boils down to why a dark horse, and were they always who you thought about for this project? I guess, how did you get to meet folks at Dark Horse?
Yeah, so for Stray, definitely Dark Horse was one of my top, if not my top choice to do this book. You know, I love a lot of the books that have come out from there, and even some of the manga. So Berserk, I've been reading for like 20 years now, you know, Fear Agent was super inspiring to me. But you know, below that, there's many other books. But so the way I got in touch with Dark Horse, so when I first had my pitch and I had the pages I was ready to go, I started by doing what everyone does, doesn't know anyone, right? You go online and you figure out who do I send this to, right? You know, publishers have their information online, and they have open submissions, and then you can send it in that way. And for me, it's like, if there is a publisher that's doing, you know, books for children, that's probably not the best publisher to send them my horror book, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where that comes from. Like, yeah, understand what the publisher does. Like, read a few of their books, you know, if they seem like a publisher that you want to go with, and understand what they're about. Because then, you know, you can tell in a way if they're going to be, if what you're doing is going to be resonant with them or not. And if they're going to be the right people to publish and promote your book. Because, again, maybe I give a children's publisher my horror book, they're not going to know what to do with it, even if they like it, right? So I think that's an important part. And so I did that. I went online. I sent it to a few places. There was interest. I actually, when I sent it to Dark Horse initially, I didn't hear back. And I think that's normal when you're pitching comic books, because, you know, there's a submission email. They're getting hundreds of submissions a week, probably. And Jim can probably quote a more exact number. But they also, like, you got to remember, every editor is working on like 5 or 6 books or whatever number of books at different stages, and that's their priority. So, like, looking at your pitch is not a priority for them, right? At least it shouldn't be. Someone maybe looks at it, but they're looking at 100 of different pitches. So, you know, it might not be the most effective way. I was lucky enough that I got a few responses back, and there was interest from a few publishers, but it wasn't until I talked to a Dark Horse editor in person, Spencer Cushing, at San Diego last year, that I actually got Dark Horse attention, and I got eventually, a few months later, I had a contract for them. So it took me showing him, this is my book, and talking a little bit about it, to get his contact, and then sending him a PDF of it, and then starting that conversation. But previously, I had been pitching for a while to different publishers with different levels. And another thing that I try to do, again, you got to be respectful of people that are very busy editors, right? Once I knew it was going to happen with Dark Horse, I contacted the few publishers that I was talking to that were different places with the book, and I let them know, hey, you know, I'm going to go with Dark Horse. And that's kind of how things got started with Dark Horse.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of really like basic stuff when you think about it that this process entails that, you know, it seems really daunting, but really it's like, hey, grab a few of your favorite comic books, open it up to the credits, see who the editor is, see who the assistant editor is, you know, see who's working on the stuff that you're liking. And then if they're going to be at a show, seek them out. If they're on Twitter, see if you can follow them, maybe strike up a conversation, maybe, you know, shoot them a direct message if that's possible, and just say, hey, I'd be interested in pitching someday. What would you need? What can I do to, you know, take steps in that direction? And I think especially if you start the conversation with like, hey, I'm interested in learning more, I'd like to show you something eventually, but I think it might not be ready or whatever it is, a lot of people are happy to at least say, hey, you know, like, do this, this, and this, and hit me back in a few months and things of that nature. And honestly, it's like, you know, and then it just takes time. Like Carlos, like you're saying, it's like, you just got to kind of stick with it. You keep talking with people, you be polite, you be respectful of their time. And then hopefully you have something good, and eventually the timing syncs up and you can take some next steps.
Yeah, and when I met Spencer at San Diego, I actually had been to one of his panels that was about, you know, what editors do and the different projects and how they manage projects. So I actually had a question for him that was an honest question that I asked him when I met him about something he mentioned in the panel, and that's how our conversation got started. So I wasn't coming in with like, "Hi, I'm Carlos. Here's my," like, I had something to talk about, you know, right, with him. And eventually that led into that direction. And I totally, you kind of have to become a little bit of a stalker when you're going to cons and trying to like get things going. So yeah, in advance I would see, okay, who's doing panels? What publishers are there? What books do they have? I knew that, I knew a few books that Spencer was editing actually. And in the panel, like, I got more information on them. And you got to read a lot and do your homework. That's definitely a big part of pitching.
It's interesting too, because like, I've definitely been on panels and I'm sure a lot of people have, where all of a sudden somebody like raises their hand with a question and they start like either saying they're going to pitch their book or they start trying to pitch their book. And it's immediately this thing where it's like, even if it's the world's greatest comic book, you know, the most brilliant concept, it's kind of this immediate understanding of like, I don't think you've spent much time or any time maybe researching how this might work. And yeah, that's a problem, because part of this is not just being able to tell stories. It's being able to understand like how to strike up those relationships and take those steps forward. And yeah, it's like Carlos, like you're saying, it's like, if you ask a good question and then maybe you swing by the booth later and you're like, "Hey, I really enjoyed the panel. Thanks so much for answering my question. I'd love to follow up with some more conversation." Like, that's a great way to just like try and have a genuine information gathering conversation that maybe scores you a business card. And then that business card allows you to send an email with your work. And then maybe, you know, 3, 6 months, a year later, who knows, maybe that person is saying, "Hey, yeah, let's do something," you know, but it's a process. You gotta invest that time and not try and rush everything at once, because that's not going to work.
Yeah, when I started going to cons, like, I went to a lot of cons last year for that, because I didn't really know many people in comics. I knew maybe I had maybe a few friends doing things, but it was like, if I got a card, like you said, or an email, or I was able to establish an initial conversation, that's already a win, right? It's a small step in the right direction. And then the other thing that's important to do is talk to other creators, right? Meet artists, meet other writers, editors, letterers, everyone, and just start like showing them what you're doing and start establishing a community, because comics, it's a small community, it's a small world, and everyone talks to each other, right? Or, mm-hmm, you know, there's a lot of different people talking to each other. So you never know when someone is going to be the person that's going to say, "Hey, that guy has a really cool book, check it out." I actually met one editor through someone that I didn't know, that I showed my work to, and they introduced me to someone at this editor. Then I'm now having conversations and I'm pitching stuff to them. So you never know.
It's true. And you never, I think it's good to be mindful of, you know, that just being polite and trying to just, you know, meet people and strike up conversations and see where it goes. But the other thing is, I definitely once was in a position at a show where I was talking to a friend who was a journalist, and somebody came up who had written, you know, a new book, and they kind of were very intense with him about wanting him to read the book again. And he's like, "I didn't like your review. I want you to read it again." And I was witnessing this whole thing, and I was just going, and then at a certain point, my journalist friend was like, "Maybe you should try and hand the book off to this editor here, who might, you know, I'm not going to change my review." And it was just this thing where it was like, just watching this whole thing go down, I was like, "Oh, well, this is a red flag for me. I don't think I would like to work with this person." And that's, you know, you never know. I mean, that person probably should have realized he had an audience, but but I think regardless, it's like, you never know. And I think it's important to try and just, you know, if there's a potential opportunity, hand something off, or if someone's there to take it or there to make a strike something up with, do it. And if there's a situation where, you know, you're unhappy or you're not liking how it's going, sometimes just walk away. You're not going to win everyone. Not everyone's going to like your pitch. Not everyone's going to like your comic. And if that's what you're trying to get into comics for, everyone liking your story, then you're already going to lose, because it's never going to happen.
Yep. Yep.
So one thing I wanted to ask about, Carlos, that I think is, it's again, it kind of goes back to another thing I really like to seeing pitches again when it goes to character arcs, and kind of even beyond that, like what is a writer's or a creator's reason for telling a story? And I think especially in now having read issue one without getting very spoilery, I mean, it seems like the relationship between a person and their pet is something that's very personal to you, but it also feels like there's this element of the potential problems or the some of the huge problems that come with colonization and the military industrial complex. So I'm wondering how much of that kind of like real life, I don't want to call it commentary because it's not even quite that. It's just, you know, something that you probably are concerned about and think about, and it's a story you wanted to tell. How much of that do you think you kind of put in the pitch and might have resonated or shown through with an editor?
Oh, definitely. So as part of the pitch, I had one area that was like the synopsis of or the outline of the story. But I also had another area that was, I think it was, I called it the reason why. Like, why am I telling this story? And yes, you actually hit on the two notes that I had in there. One was definitely the relationship between a human and their pet, because I think, you know, like everyone, I've gone through some rough times, and sometimes there's a friend there to help you out. Sometimes that friend is not a human, but a pet, right? So I have a lot of respect for cats and dogs and pets, and you know, they're so alive and so unique. So for me, I felt like that was something that had not been maybe told that many times, and that was very dear and interesting to me, and I wanted to explore. A second aspect was, yeah, colonization, just kind of like the way politicians might have an agenda that they don't tell you about, but that they're pursuing. And also, you know, with the recent, a lot of stuff that has happened recently, it is very obvious that these politicians, not only in the US, but in other countries, are doing things because they think they're right. Yeah, they're not doing them because they're evil or anything like that. They're doing them because they think that's the way they're going to make their country better, or they're going to save their people, or you know, whatever it is, right? And it made me think, took me back. I'm Venezuelan, like I said. Obviously, I wasn't around when Venezuela was colonized, but I read a lot about colonization, and I have a good understanding of, like, how that affected Venezuela. And colonization was probably the same way. I imagine when the Spaniards and when the Englishmen were coming and were getting to America, they were not trying to go and commit genocide, right? They wanted to find a way to commerce with the other side of the world, and they wanted to, you know, there were economic reasons, and they thought people that were on those trips, they thought they were doing the right thing, right? But it was horrible, right? So that's something that I wanted to, that I felt was worth exploring in my book. So those were the two main themes. And then the other thing that came from that was that idea that Lou and Kiara are actually in that situation, right? They're being used to, like, find these planets. They don't know what for. Eventually they'll find out. And then those planets are being colonized, right? So they're in a situation where they think they don't know necessarily that they're doing something bad, but they're going to find out. And the people in charge think that it's for the good of humanity, right? So, yeah, definitely those were important themes for me that I wanted to explore in this book.
Yeah, I think I love hearing too that you kind of entitled that section "The Reason Why," because I often think of it as like the flip side, right? Like when you're on the other end of the pitching process and you're kind of looking at stuff and you're like, I kind of reversed the question to like, well, why should I care? Why should anyone care?
Yeah.
you know, like, yeah, there's maybe you have a really cool story with a guy chopping off monsters' heads, but what's it about? Like, you know, like you can make a beautiful, you know, hyper violent, fun comic, you know, it might be amazing looking, it might be really like entertaining, might be beautiful art, but it's like, I think if you really think about all the comics that really resonate with you, it's never usually like, oh, just the art was good and it's my favorite comic. It's like, no, the art, the story, like a lot of things are syncing up, and a lot of that too is like the way you connect with the characters and things like that. And that comes down to, I think, often, why should the reader care? It's because it's about something. It's because the writer or creator has something to say. And that, to me, I always think is huge to see in a pitch. You're like, all right, this isn't just, oh, it's another high fantasy story, or it's another sci-fi saga or whatever it is. It's like there's something here. There's some meat on these bones. And I think that's huge to show in your pitch if you can.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any reason to write a book if you don't have that in a way. You know, I mean, you could do a book for fun, but, you know, I don't know. I feel like I pour my heart out when I wrote this book. And I wouldn't have done it any other way. There were sections for me that were very hard to write. But I think that's what made it something that then I could, you know, like you said, make it interesting for a publisher, right? Because that hopefully comes true and it's obvious there. And it's another way of differentiating what you have, right? Because like I mentioned before, there's probably hundreds of pitches that the publisher is going to be receiving maybe every week or every month. And why should they pick yours, right? Why? And I mm-hmm. think, like you mentioned, this is one of the most important things, right? Just like the art is important because that's the first thing they're going to see. The cover of the book is another thing that I think is super important in a pitch. And all those elements have to sync and match. One point of advice from me was take as long as you need to get those elements right before you even start writing the script.
Well, and I think it always goes back to that same idea of and, you know, I don't know who said this originally, but I think everyone's heard this where it's like there's no new stories in a way, you know, this kind of that same mentality. It's like, well, sci-fi has been done a million ways. Fantasy has been done a million ways. Crime has been done a million ways. You know, like there's any type of situation you can put together. Maybe there's a slightly clever version of it where you're like, oh, we haven't seen that before. And that's nice. That's a little bit of a hook. But again, it's like that only takes you so far, and you really need to have why you're doing it underneath it, your take, your the perspective you're putting onto this, what you have to say about this. And you know, I think I've definitely worked on comics where, you know, you can kind of tell someone has something to say, but they're a little bit too hung up on making sure a lot of these cool one-off ideas they have show up, and it kind of muddies the message. It kind of slows down the story. And I often think knowing why you're telling a story is it's great for the pitch. And it's great for editors to see, but I also think it's a super useful tool to figure out earlier in your project, because then when you're mm-hmm. outlining, when you're putting all this together, you're like, is that necessary? Do I need that? Like you were talking with the origin issue. It's like, do we need the origin issue to be issue number one?
Yeah.
No, you probably don't. And that's what you decided. And that's, I think, because you knew, you took the time to figure out the story you wanted to tell.
Yeah, and that origin story is not even in the book. You know, it's file away for maybe future use. But yeah, it's totally right. Like you have to really get the story out of you. And there's the chance too that while you're writing, while you're outlining, maybe the reason why will change, and that's fine. But at least you have that initial reason why to get going.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really, you know, it's funny that what we keep kind of circling around in a very basic sense is, I think, an incredibly simplified version of all this advice is like, if you really know your story, which is what developing your pitch is all about, you mm-hmm. have to really understand it so you can really express it to the next person down the line, so that they yeah. can express it to the next person down the line, all the way down to the reader who can really quickly figure out, oh, that's an interesting idea, and I feel like there's something that this person has to say here. And I think if you know it well enough, that makes that whole process easier if you get the, you know, you'll get the opportunity to go through that process if you take the time to distill your story to that point, I think.
Yeah, and even, you know, I have descriptions of the characters. I have, you know, some writing on how the world works. I have visual references to certain things. And no one's going to see that but the artist and myself, right? But and that's all, whatever you need to do, like you said, to get that story figured out and understand your world, what's going to happen, where you're going with the story, it's super important.
Well, and I think that is a hugely important thing, too. And I don't know that I've ever really thought, in all the advice I've given on this and done myself, I don't know that I've ever really explicitly said something that I think is pretty obvious, but it's like, you got to consider your audience every step along the way. Does, yeah. Does an editor you're pitching to you need to see every character description? Do they need to see every aspect of world building? You know, does the audience immediately need to understand every element of your story or every little bit of, you know, cryptocurrency that exists in your sci-fi culture? Like, no, they don't, you know, like figure out what the most important thing for whoever you're pitching the book to at the time, be it an editor or a prospective reader, is, and then, you know, have that, and then you can proceed.
Yep, absolutely.
I like the way that you summed it up in your notes, Carlos, of being patient and persistent at the same time.
Yeah, totally. So like one thing that I did when I was pitching online and through email through different editors that I met at conferences is that I made a document where I had dates where like, okay, I email this person on Thursday, July 22nd, right? Okay, follow up August 22nd and so on, right? And I have like a whole matrix of the whole story of how this book got finally picked up, right? But it made it so that I'm not just sitting there waiting, right? Okay, I email Image or whoever. When are they going to get back to me, right? So you have to have patience because otherwise you're going to go insane. So having tracking that in that way where I'm like, okay, maybe if they don't get back to me in this date, I'll send a follow-up email to check on them. And eventually I'll have a follow-up email that's the last one and I give up, right? And I work all that out it just kind of helped me, right? You have to be patient because you don't know what other work those publishers, those editors have in their plate, that they're not going to get to your email or to your pitch until they have time. And then you have to, you know, be persistent because it might get, they might forget about it and then you bring it up in an email or in person and then they might actually check it out and have something to say about it. And that's another thing that sometimes you pitch something to a publisher, to an editor, and it might not be the right thing for them, but if your pitch is good, they'll remember and they'll either give you feedback or they'll say, hey, this is not right for us, but pitch me the next thing you have. So that happened to me two or three times where I have now, you know, the opportunity to pitch directly to other editors, even though, you know, maybe the pitch wasn't right for them or the timing wasn't right or whatever was going on. So, yeah.
I was just going to say the one thing I also wanted to add is I think, Carlos, earlier you mentioned like editors might have 5 other projects or things like that. And I think the thing to consider is some editors might only have 5 projects, but that's probably 5 monthly books. There's other editors that might have up to 20 projects that are mini series, graphic novels, things of that nature. So I think that's where that persistence really kicks in too. You know, it's like it can be hard and uncomfortable to be, you know, deliberate with your email strategy and really go, okay, I'm going to do this every month, every 2 months, whatever you set. But the bottom line is everyone you're going to be pitching to is incredibly busy. So they're not there just going, oh, if I get the time, I'm going to throw you a book. Just wait till I get a hole in my schedule, because that hole is never going to exist in their schedule. So you really do just have to stick with it. And it is one of those things, as long as, you know, kind of as we talked about before, as long as you're being polite, as long as you're being, you know, cordial and everything like that, people aren't going to mind a polite follow-up email. And if you're consistent, they're going to go, this person's serious. And as long as you're not a jerk about it while you do it, then it's, you know, it can't hurt.
And another trick to doing a follow-up that I use is that maybe you have something new to say about the book. So maybe now you have you talk to an artist that's going to do a different cover for it. And you can say that, right? Hey, I wanted to update you, let you know that I actually have this awesome artist that's going to also do a cover for this. Let me know if you looked at the pitch, right? Or in my case, after the pitch was done, I kept going. So by the time Dark Horse picked the book, we were almost finishing issue 3. And I had followed up with different editors with like, okay, here's issue 1. Let me know what you think. And again, every time I had something to say, I would it would be an opportunity to follow up, but also have a little nugget of information that made it seem like I had a reason to write that wasn't just like, come on, man, check my book out.
Right. Well, and sometimes too, that doesn't even have to be on the same project. Sometimes it's like, oh, right, I did a short story for an anthology. I just wanted to kick that your way in case you're interested in reading it. You know, like it's something to keep the conversation going. It's something to show them that you're very serious about working in comics. You're continuing to work on the project or multiple projects. It's always good to show that you're not just sitting around waiting for a green light, because that's really not how anyone's able to build a career. It's not like a switch gets flicked and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got a green light on a book. I've got a comics career. It's like, no, it's about hustle. It's about doing a lot of that. And I think some of that, like showing the people who might hire you that you are doing that hustle, that you're working on that, is an important thing, because you're going to have to collaborate with them, and people don't want to collaborate with lazy people. it can be a hassle. You know, you want to collaborate with the people who are really hustling out there. And when you can see that in this email, like Carlos is saying, you follow up, show them other stuff, show them what you're working on, you know, show them that you're continuing to pursue the project. That can be really helpful stuff.
Yep. And then the other thing, we were talking about this before, but I have another book that's going to come out a little later, probably in September. That's the third volume of Space Writers. And, you know, there was another writer in the project before. And the way I got invited to, I got asked to be on that book is because I was pitching straight nonstop in every conference that I could. And I was also showing it to different artists and different creators. And I met Alexis Sirit, who's the artist and the one of the creators of the whole Space Writers thing. And, you know, he liked what I was doing. He saw me at different conferences. And then one day he called me and was like, hey, I'm looking for someone to write this. And I see you everywhere, and I like what you're doing, so do you want to write this, you know? And that was a completely unexpected opportunity. I mentioned before when I was talking to you guys that I was a big fan of Space Writers before that. So when he called me and asked me, I thought he was pranking me.
it's such a cool book. Yeah. It's such a cool book. I would have thought the same thing. I'd be like, no way. No way.
And I just happened to be the right person because, A, I love sci-fi, and like him, I'm Venezuelan. So like the sensibility of the book is something that I got right away. And, you know, we just kind of struck this friendship, and it just happened. I wasn't trying to write Space Writers. That was something that just came my way because of the other stuff that I was doing.
Well, and I think that's the, you know, it kind of comes back to some of that. Like, you never know who's watching. You never know who's paying attention. And it might not be exactly something you were trying for, but it could happen. And I think some of that too is, you know, you kind of show people what you're doing, you show people what you want to do. And sometimes those are the really pleasant surprises that come together where somebody sees it and they go, hey, I like what that guy's doing. I like what that person is doing. Maybe there's an opportunity here. That's awesome.
Well, I think the, you know, the big takeaways here, I'm just like, patient and persistent is the thing I'm going to, I feel like that's a t-shirt. I know, if only we had somebody that made t-shirts that were related to comics. If only. Jim, I don't know how often you plug that, but I'm realizing we haven't plugged your t-shirt situation.
I only downloaded like t-shirt making software for like two weeks to get a few bad ideas out of my system.
Well, I'm pitching
another free trial to slap that one on a t-shirt for sure.
I'm pitching patient and persistence, the Carlos method. is a future t-shirt. So we've got Stray coming out through Dark Horse, and that's going to be out in August 14th of 2019, depending on when you're listening. And then Space Riders is coming out in the fall from Black Mask. And I know you've mentioned that you have other stuff that's in various stages, but probably nothing that's been announced yet, Carlos?
Correct. Yeah, I have a short story and an anthology that's coming out on Top Cow, and I believe that was announced in San Diego. Then I have two other projects that are in development. One I'm actively pitching, and another one that's on the early stages.
Yeah. Excellent.
But Straight and Space Writers are the two that are announced and coming your way. Like you mentioned, Straight August 14, and Space Writers in the fall.
And where should people go and look for you online? What's a good place or places?
Yeah, so I'm very active on Twitter. And that's just my name, Carlos Gifoni. It's my handle there. And then carlosgifoni.com. And then the spelling of my last name is G-I-F-F-O-N-I. And then, you know, in my website, you have links to all my social media, my Bandcamp, because I'm doing a soundtrack for Straight as well.
So, nice.
You can check it out there. My website and Twitter are probably the best two places.
Oh, that's very fun. I don't know if I realized you were doing a soundtrack. I will definitely look for that. And Jim, I know I got in my inbox your newsletter in the last couple of days, and that's always a fun thing to get. If you haven't signed up for Jim's newsletter, I'm going to encourage you to go get that because it's a great read, and it's a lot of this very specific information and anecdotes, and just it's chock full of good stuff when you get it in your inbox. It's exciting and fun.
Yeah, it's at thejimgibbons.com/newsletter. So head there and sign up.
And you're also on Twitter as well and pretty active there. Any other places folks should check you out?
Twitter and Instagram, I'm at thejimgibbons. So I'm in both places. Come, drop me a line.
Excellent. Well, appreciate you doing this, Carlos, and taking the time to talk about it and share your no pun intended experience of starting to do comics and get where you are, because I think it's a ton of great advice, and it just boils down to patient persistence, and clearly your creative career has helped prepped you for a comics career. Your other many interests where you're wearing the business hat as well as the creative hat and getting it done.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. This is really a blast. This is really fun to do.
Yeah, and I will say, having been lucky enough to read the first issue right before this, it was very interesting to go into this conversation knowing we were going to talk about pitching, knowing what I like to see in a pitch, knowing what I want to see in an issue number one. And I will just say it was very satisfying to read it and see like all of the work and deliberation that went into crafting what I think is a really nice issue number one. And I'm not just blowing smoke. I thought it was like I could see it all there. I was like, as an editor, like, oh, I like seeing that. Oh, that's something I wanted to see. And that's the same stuff I love as a reader too. So I'm excited to see where the book goes. I like
Thank
issue
you.
number one a lot.
Thank you, thank you. That warms my heart. Thank you.
Get in on the ground floor, just like Jim Gibbons. Be like Jim Gibbons, kids. Read straight number ones, and you also can see what he's talking about and see the matrix code. It's all there.
Yeah, be like me in this way at least.
This in many other ways, as you can learn from Jim's newsletter. All right, well, if you have a question or topic you want to hear talked about on the show, email info@comicsexperience.com, and we will happily talk about it. And thank you all for listening. And until next time, keep making comics.